From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and this is On Point. Defense Secretary Mark Esper fired Navy Secretary Richard Spencer yesterday. That's the latest turn in the dramatic story of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher, who had been accused of war crimes. President Trump intervened on behalf of Gallagher and in two similar cases. Navy Secretary Spencer reportedly tried to negotiate a side deal with the White House to let Gallagher keep his title but still face potential discipline. Then more chaos ensued. Trump's critics say by getting involved in the case, he has undermined military authority and green-lighted bad behavior by U.S. troops. But Trump supporters say that as commander-in-chief, he calls the final shots in the military. This hour on Point, upheaval in the Navy and whether it was right for Trump to step in. But first, news from the campaign trail. Former New York City mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg is officially running for president in 2020. He's obviously a late entrant to the race, and to make up for lost time, he plans to bypass early voting states and go all in on Super Tuesday. To get us up to speed, we have national political reporter for Politico, Elena Schneider, on the line. Elena, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And Elena, I want to start off by playing a clip from Saturday Night Live this weekend. This is when Michael Bloomberg crashes into the already crowded Democratic debate stage. And here's Melissa Vina Sr. as MSNBC host Rachel Maddow and also former SNL cast member Fred Armisen as Bloomberg.
Did somebody say billionaire?
Get in here.
Well, I tipped the doorman $30 million.
Does this mean you're officially running for president?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I'd be hard to beat.
Elena Schneider, Bloomberg is a multi-billionaire. I think one estimate is $50 billion. I believe that's more than Donald Trump's net worth. And that wealth is both an advantage and disadvantage to Michael Bloomberg in this race. Tell us a little bit about that aspect.
Well, certainly his wealth gives him the ability to run a presidential campaign starting at the end of November, when voting in Iowa starts just in a couple of months. And so certainly he's been able to scramble this primary by dropping, even in the last couple of days, $35 million on television ads across the country that your listeners may have already seen on their televisions, introducing himself as sort of a business leader, somebody who can bring a moderate lane to this party and can be Donald Trump on business credentials and that sort of leadership. And so I think that in that sense, certainly gives him an advantage because he is the only candidate who's in a position to do that. But on the flip side of that, he comes with a real foil for two leading candidates in this race, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, both of whom have railed consistently against corruption in politics, talked about billionaires and millionaires buying influence in Washington. And in a lot of ways, Michael Bloomberg presents a perfect foil for them in that argument.
That's right. In fact, Bernie Sanders has weighed in to say, here's another white male millionaire billionaire trying to buy the election. So that's a point of attack for them onto him.
Right. And look, he at this point doesn't look like he's going to be trying to even make the DNC debate stage because he will not be accepting donations, which is an element or a requirement for DNC to appear on the DNC stage is to have a certain number of contributors. So we may not see them sort of going after each other on a debate stage, but we certainly are going to see more an escalating attacks between and among these candidates because they sort of present, as I said, perfect foils for each other in both senses, both for Michael Bloomberg being able to say that these plans are unrealistic and that he can actually get these things done versus Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who are both going to say, as you said, say he's buying his way into this election.
And it seems that one of Bloomberg's selling points is that he presents a moderate option to Democrats or anyone who wants to vote for anyone but Donald Trump, but maybe feels that the entire Democratic portfolio so far doesn't offer them someone they can be enthusiastic about. He basically is saying, I am that moderate alternative. Tell us a bit about why he thinks he's that person.
Right. So Michael Bloomberg very publicly considered getting into the presidential race back last spring. And once Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, decided to get into this race, ultimately Bloomberg pulled back and didn't end up getting in last spring. Based on our reporting, because he thought somebody like Joe Biden would take up too much space in that area in terms of providing themselves as a moderate alternative to people like Warren and Sanders. But as we've seen, Joe Biden has stumbled and has not been able to hold on to him. And he consistently is still leading national polls, but has backslid in terms of the amount of support that he's been able to maintain. And so people like Mayor Michael Bloomberg see that as an opening where, you know, if Joe Biden cannot hold on to that mantle, that maybe there's room for somebody like him to do that. But look, you know, when I talk to voters in Iowa and New Hampshire and even more broadly just across the country, There's not a huge interest in adding to the list of people who are running for president. In fact, what I hear most consistently is people want to see fewer people on that debate stage so that it's easier for them to actually make a decision here. So it's going to be a real uphill battle for Michael Bloomberg to explain to voters why, you know, in this long menu of candidates that they could pick from, why he is the one who getting in this late is the one that they should go and support.
And what do you think his biggest selling point will be?
Well, I think that he's spent an enormous amount of money after his years as New York City mayor on issues like climate change and on gun control, and spending enormous sums of money backing candidates to try and change the makeup both of Congress and state legislature. So he certainly has put his money where his mouth is in terms of the issues that he cares about. And he also is the mayor of, or was the mayor, a three-term mayor of the biggest city in the country. And certainly that presents a striking contrast to somebody like Pete Buttigieg, who's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, which is only about 100,000 people. And he's certainly been able to galvanize some of that sort of center-left area of the primary that maybe have been less enthused about Joe Biden, but find Pete Buttigieg sort of a young, fresh alternative, that Bloomberg can come in and say, look, you know, it's nice that you've led this town, but I've led an entire city, and has a long record of bringing out sort of, you know, business economic redevelopment in the city. But obviously, that also then comes with some real challenges. Just last week, he announced that he apologized for his support for Stop and Frisk, a very controversial policing tactic that was used in New York City that targeted particularly people of color in that city. So it's not without that record also comes with a lot more questions for him.
Elena Schneider is a national political reporter for Politico. We may be speaking with you again on the show in coming months as we follow this race. Thanks very much for talking with us about Michael Bloomberg entering the presidential race.
Thanks again for having me.
And now we are moving on to the chaos at the U.S. Navy. Joining us from Washington is Jeff Shogel. He's a Pentagon reporter for Task and Purpose, which is a military and veteran-focused digital media company. You can link to his reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Jeff, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. Pleasure to be here.
And listeners, as we talk with Jeff and other guests the rest of this hour, we want to hear what you think about this case, whether Donald Trump should have intervened in this war crimes case involving a Navy SEAL, whether having done so, as his critics argue, undermines military justice and perhaps gives a green light to U.S. troops who think they can behave badly and be pardoned for it. Jeff, in terms of just the basics, this whole situation largely revolves around a Navy SEAL named Edward Gallagher. Can you tell us what he was accused of, convicted of, acquitted of?
It's a long story. He was accused of killing a wounded ISIS fighter in Mosul in 2017. He was also accused of shooting at civilians, an old man and a young girl. And going back to killing the ISIS fighter, he was accused of posing for a picture with the corpse. Ultimately, he was acquitted of murder and acquitted of shooting at the Iraqi civilians. He was convicted of posing with the picture and sentenced to be demoted one rank. But the president on November 15th ordered that he be restored to the rank and pay grade of chief petty officer. One thing to keep in mind, Chief Gallagher has not been pardoned. That conviction for posing with the corpse still stands. Then we found out last week the Navy was going to try to take away his SEAL trident. The trident is the insignia the SEALs wear. It is the symbol of being in that elite community. Taking it away amounts to a public excommunication. And on Sunday, Chief Gallagher appeared on Fox News talking about this. And what the defense secretary told reporters just this morning was that on Sunday, the president told him that Gallagher would keep his trident after all.
Speaking of Fox, last month, Fox & Friends co-host Pete Hegseth sat down with a group of former U.S. special operators, including Edward Gallagher, in an episode of Fox Nation's Modern Warriors. Hegseth asked Gallagher to respond to criticisms of Navy culture, and here's part of Gallagher's answer.
We do not have a problem. There are people in the community, you know, that are, mistakes are made. Mm-hmm. That's been going on since the beginning of the military. We should take care of our own. You know, if those mistakes are made, there shouldn't be knee-jerk reactions to, you know, either firing leaders or getting rid of individuals in the military. We should be taking care of our own.
Jeff Shogel, in some ways that seems to summarize what Trump's perspective on this seems to be. He seems to think that Edward Gallagher was caught up in the unpleasantness of war, the horror of war, but maybe had not intended to commit crimes, and they believe in mercy and second chances. How would you summarize Trump's position about Edward Gallagher and his actions?
When talking about Trump's position, it's impossible not to say how important Pete Hegseth has been to this process. He is...
This is the Fox personality.
Not only is he a Fox News personality, he is an informal presidential advisor, and he has spoken numerous times with President Trump about this. In fact, on November 4th, Hegseth said he had spoken to the president, who had told him he was going to issue clemency for Gallagher and the two other service members. From the president's public comments, it sounds as though his philosophy on how you win wars fits in here, that you win wars by killing as many of the enemy as possible, something that's almost Sherman-esque. So with Pete Hegseth arguing that Eddie Gallagher got a raw deal from the military justice system, the president sprang to action. He lent his personal attorney to represent Chief Gallagher. He also ordered that Gallagher be released from pretrial confinement. And when Gallagher was acquitted for murder, the president tweeted, "Glad I could help."
And in the past few months, Trump has either said or tweeted, I'll read some of them. He says, "We teach them," meaning our troops, "how to be great fighters. And then when they fight, sometimes they really get treated very unfairly." He also said, "We train our boys to be killing machines, then prosecute them when they kill." So his position seems to be, let's keep that in perspective. We need to take a brief break, but hang on with us. And we actually have Edward Gallagher's lawyer with us on the show. We're going to hear his perspective as well. Jeff Shogel is a Pentagon reporter for Task and Purpose, a military and veteran-focused digital media company. We're talking about the war crimes case involving Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher and Donald Trump's intervention in that, which ultimately led to the termination of the Navy Secretary this weekend. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point. Stay with us.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We're taking a look at the war crimes case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher and how that ultimately led to the firing this weekend of Navy Secretary Richard Spencer. Listeners, please join this conversation. And in particular, military veterans or members of the military, what is your take on this upheaval at the top of the military? What should a fair disciplinary process look like for members of the military? If you're in the military, you disagree with something that a commanding officer tells you, is your only choice to resign? Can you ever justifiably disobey? Find us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm with Jeff Shogel, a Pentagon reporter for Task and Purpose, a military-focused media company. Also joining us now from Washington is Timothy Parlatori. He's an attorney for Chief Petty Officer Edward Gallagher, the Naval SEAL at the center of this. And Timothy Parlatori is a former naval officer himself. Timothy, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Can you talk to us about, there's been a lot of activity over the weekend. As you know, this ultimately led to the resignation yesterday of the Navy Secretary. As you see it, has this case played out the way it should in a just and fair way?
The result is, but the manner in which we've taken to get here is circuitous at best. I mean, this is a case that right from the beginning was just hopelessly infected by misconduct by the investigators, misconduct by the prosecutors, misconduct by the Naval Special Warfare Command. And, you know, while we were at each stage, we had to fight hard to get the jury to see through all that. To get the correct verdict, then, you know, fighting to try and get him to keep his rank, and then this final fight with the Trident pin. You know, in the end, the result is correct, but I can't say it was because the system worked the way that it was supposed to.
We should
because
note
there
that
were a lot of lot of flaws.
We should note the trident pinned is sort of the signature insignia for SEALs, and there was a move to try to take that away from Edward Gallagher. Donald Trump has said that Edward Gallagher will keep it. And I do want to note, you are correct, this was a trial of Edward Gallagher that was very problematic. There was a military judge that actually removed the lead prosecutor because they felt like there was wrongdoing in how that trial was being conducted. But I want to, Timothy Politore, focus on something you have said many times, which is that when you are in the military, you do not disobey. That if you cannot accept the guidance of the commander-in-chief, then you just need to leave. That you don't rebel, you resign. Do you believe that is truly the only option?
If it is a lawful order, yes. You know, you can, if it's a lawful order that has been publicly promulgated like that, then you do have that obligation. Yeah, you can discuss it with the commander-in-chief ahead of time or with whoever's issuing the order ahead of time. But once your commander makes a decision and says this is what you're going to do, you execute it or you resign.
Go ahead.
If it's an unlawful order is an entirely different scenario. If your commanding officer tells you to go execute prisoners, then you have an obligation to disobey the order. That's the legacy of Nuremberg, that I was just following orders is not a defense. But if it's a lawful order, you have to execute it.
I want to play you a piece of sound from a former U.S. Navy secretary. This is Ray Mabus. He served from 2009 to 2017 in the Obama administration. He told MSNBC last week that President Trump's pardons of in these cases of not just Edward Gallagher, but two other officers were, quote, bad any way you look at it. Here's Ray Mabus.
The message this sends to people is you're not going to be held accountable. You can do whatever you want to. There are no consequences for really bad acts. And as I said, it completely dishonors those Americans who have fought and many of them who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan without feeling the need to do these horrendous breaches of law.
Timothy Politore, as an attorney for Edward Gallagher, the Navy SEAL, how do you feel about that quote by Ray Mabus?
I mean, look, Ray Mabus is a politician, and he is obviously taking this situation and trying to put a political spin on it. And that's unfortunately one of the byproducts of the politicization of this case. Yeah, obviously, having the president's involvement has been very helpful to us. We were able to get Eddie Gallagher out of prison and how he was able to participate in the defense. But the downside of the president's involvement is that for a lot of people that fall on one side of the political aisle or the other, it made it so that the facts were no longer relevant, and so they were more worried about the politics. And because Donald Trump supported Eddie Gallagher, therefore he must have murdered women and children, and therefore he should be in jail for the rest of his life, and all these other crazy things just because of their hatred of the president. Now, the problem with Secretary Mabus's statement there is that it fails to take into account what actually happened here. There are many cases of so-called war crimes, and there are several individuals who are currently serving life sentences in Fort Leavenworth for that. President Trump did not make a wholesale pardon of all of these cases. Instead, he took very targeted action against very individualized cases. So in the case of Matt Goldstein, which it hasn't gone to trial yet, but is a case that is also so hopelessly infected with prosecutorial misconduct.
This is an Army major facing murder charges for a similar crime.
Correct. And in that case, because of the severe misconduct of the prosecutors, the amount of time that's passed, the quality of the evidence, what the president ended up doing there, in effect, was to spare the country from potentially another high profile and highly embarrassing acquittal.
Timothy Politore, in the case of your client, Edward Gallagher, this is a case where members of his own platoon told commanders and Navy investigators that they saw him shoot civilians and murder a wounded captive. And in terms of posing with a corpse, Edward Gallagher never even denied that. I think for the people who are upset by Trump's intervention, they feel that there's a difference between giving a soldier the benefit of the doubt and then just excusing unacceptable and illegal acts. We actually got a comment on our website they don't want to read. It's a man, I think, who writes, I never in a million
years would have thought I would see this in my lifetime. The president is literally elevating a war criminal over the chief of the U.S. Navy. This is beyond the pale. Someone stop this man before it is too late. The wrong man resigned. Do you feel like this is a case where atrocities were forgiven that should not have been?
Well, and this is exactly what I was talking about, where that commenter is focusing more on, you know, their hatred of the president than the actual facts in this case. And even your question, you talk about how a couple of members of his platoon, not the whole platoon, claimed things that weren't true. They claimed that he shot at civilians, but nobody who was actually in the same building with him ever saw him shoot at civilians. The people who claimed this were people who were in different buildings who initially thought that these people were shot by ISIS, not by Eddie Gallagher. And those charges were so laughable that the jury actually asked the prosecutors afterwards, why did you even include those? Because you make the whole thing look weak by comparison, because those charges were just so baseless. You know, as to stabbing this ISIS prisoner, yeah, one guy in the platoon said he stabbed him and killed him. And yet you have another one who said he stabbed him, but there was no blood. You have another person who said, you know, he stabbed him, but not in the neck. It was in his side. You have another person who said, I was there the whole time. He never stabbed him at all, and there's no stab wounds on the body. You have photographs of the body where if you stab somebody in the neck and kill him, there's going to be a whole lot of blood, and none of the blood's there. There was no blood found on his knife. There's pictures of Eddie Gallagher right after it. There's no blood on his arms. I mean, I don't want to relitigate the case. The jury saw through this, but
To the bigger question of whether this undermines military justice, do you think it has that effect?
Absolutely not. I think that the misreporting of this is what has a potential to undermine military justice. The idea that Eddie Gallagher is getting off with no punishment is a farce. Eddie Gallagher's children were dragged out of their house at gunpoint in their underwear and held at gunpoint on the side of the street. Eddie Gallagher was dragged out of a TBI clinic on 9/11, thrown into jail, surrounded by sex offenders, where he had to stay for 7 months. He was then put into a hospital and put on restriction, denied access to real food, denied access to phone or computer to be able to participate in his defense. He's lost a lot of money from his pay. His rank was taken away from him, and even though it was eventually restored, the idea that he didn't suffer any punishment is completely false.
Timothy Parlatore
Tell me somebody who spends that much time in jail surrounded by sex offenders to where their kids have to wear robes to come visit them so that they don't arouse the other inmates, and that person hasn't suffered any punishment?
I'm going to put that question to our next guest. And thanks to you, Timothy Parlatore, for coming on the show. Timothy Parlatore is the attorney for Edward Gallagher, who is the Navy SEAL at the center of this war crimes case. Thank you for coming on. And I want to bring in Bradley Strasser. He's a professor of philosophy at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. He teaches the ethics of warfare to Navy SEALs and other special forces cases. Bradley Strasser, welcome to the show. I know this is a case you have followed closely. We just heard Edward Gallagher's lawyer essentially say that it's Edward Gallagher who is the victim. I'm going to let you field that. What's your reaction to what we heard from Edward Gallagher's lawyer?
Yeah, hi, Sasha. Not surprising. That is Gallagher's lawyer. That is his job, I suppose, as an attorney, but it is disappointing, frankly, and kind of breathtaking to hear in the same breath Mr. Parlatore say that he believes other people have politicized these cases in response to their quote-unquote hatred of Trump, where it was the president himself who inserted himself into these cases while they were going on, publicly tweeting about them constantly, weighing in as the commander-in-chief, weighing in on an ongoing UCMJ trial. That's unprecedented, and frankly, it's very damaging to our ideal of the military profession being a self-regulating, autonomous profession.
Tell us, though, in terms of the history of presidents interceding in military justice cases like this, there certainly are examples of it, all the way from Abraham Lincoln to President Obama. So why do you think this one is different than past examples?
I do. I think it's significantly different. And I should stress again, it's not just Gallagher. The action that was taken last week was about Gallagher. It was also regarding Army Major Goldstein, who you mentioned, as well as First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. And look, each one of these cases have their own piece of controversy in them. They're complicated in some ways. But remember that the profession of arms is one that holds itself to account under its own system of governance with the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And so all three of these men were put on trial or were going to be put on trial in the case of Goldstein by other military members, by their commanders, by the people that served with them, and they were going to be tried in a jury, and in both the two cases with Lawrence and Gallagher were tried by jury of other military members. For the president to come and intervene in that and infect the cases actually as they went on is frankly, it's a slap in the face to the honorable service of all of those service members who do not only serve and fight war honorably and fight war the right way, which is what we train our military members to do. We do not train to them to be, how did Donald Trump put it, some kind of bloodthirsty killing machines or something like that, some nonsense. Instead, they are trained and proudly serve honorably, and they have their own system of accountability to hold themselves to account when that is breached.
Bradley Strasser, hold that thought, because we have a number of callers who want to weigh in. Let's go to Cheryl calling from Wrentham, Massachusetts. Cheryl, welcome to On Point and your thoughts about all of this.
Hi, just a couple of comments. As the mother of a Navy officer, I can tell you I'm outraged by President Trump interfering in military justice. This is a pure political move by Trump. He imagines that the enlisted personnel are part of his base, and he will do anything to try and appeal to part of his base, just like when he's tweeting about Hispanic judges. It's an absolute atrocity for him to interfere in military law. I also find it despicable to see Chief Petty Officer Gallagher, who is an active duty member on Fox News, trying to undermine the rule of law and military command. It's just unprecedented to me to have someone undermining the officers in the Navy sitting as an active duty member. It's atrocious.
Cheryl, thank you for your call. Let's go to Fran, who's calling from West Hartford, Connecticut. Fran, welcome to On Point. Your thoughts about the Navy SEAL war crimes case of Edward Gallagher.
Thank you. I'm sick of the knee-jerk reaction about anybody that disagrees with Trump is just a Trump hater, and that's it. That being said, I will tell Democrats to relax about one thing. The fact is that the president, being commander-in-chief, has the right to pardon somebody if he wants to. That's his right. That's the law. So if we get over that, my question as a veteran is this, and I think it's very debatable about the president's judgment, as far as it's not clear to me that I guess he has the right to say the guy can stay in the Navy if he wants to, but whatever your opinions are on it, the right that really surprises me is that he can say this guy who has never served can tell the Navy that this guy has to remain as a SEAL in an elite position, when everything that is about that is not just the job of killing and all that, but it's the honor and the ethics that you are required to meet, the moral ethics, that's worthy of debate, that part of it.
And so you're clearly saying, as commander-in-chief, Trump is, of course, he has the right to pardon. Do you feel like this was the right thing to do, interceding in this case on Trump's part?
I don't look at it that way, because whether he was right or not, it doesn't matter. He has the right to, so yes, he has the right to.
Fran, thanks for your call. Let's go to Joe calling from Melbourne, Florida. Joe, welcome to On Point. Your thoughts about this Naval SEAL war crimes case.
Thanks for taking the call. I decided to call when I heard the attorney for Mr. Gallagher speak to a political response. This has nothing to do with that. As a Marine, we're all trained to honor the Geneva Convention and honor on the battlefield. What troubles me most is the precedent that this is set by Mr. Trump. I completely agree with commutation. I completely agree with mitigating circumstances. Outright murder can't be condoned. The idea that I'm a first lieutenant and someone in my command comes to me with a complaint, I now have to worry that my promotional opportunities could be curtailed or enhanced by me letting something go forward. Because now I know that the precedent has been set. If my son commits murder on the battlefield, I now can claim, well, President Trump excused and pardoned this person. This has been a slap to the face of every honorable person who's worn the uniform, and I'm absolutely disgusted.
And Joe, you believe this may make other people in the military less likely to come forward and report what they think were violations?
There's 10% of scumbags in every organization. And what this president has done is allowed people that think the way he does, that act the way he does, now he's basically spread that disease to the armed forces. And I'm so proud of Mr. Spencer for speaking up and Admiral Green for speaking up.
Joe, thank you. Thank you for a call. We have to go to a brief break. Bradley Strasser of Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, stay with us. Also, Jeff Shogel of Task and Purpose, military-focused media company, stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We're looking at due process for Navy officers accused of war crimes in the highly publicized case of Naval SEAL Edward Gallagher. His case led to the termination over the weekend of the U.S. Secretary of the Navy. Listeners, join the conversation. What message does this dispute send to U.S. troops? How do America's partners abroad interpret this? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Jeff Shogel. He's a Pentagon reporter for Task and Purpose, a military-focused digital media company, and Bradley Strasser, a professor of philosophy at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. And Jeff, you didn't get a chance to talk last break, so I want to go to you because we listened to Edward Gallagher's lawyer, Timothy Parlatori, basically saying this was a flawed trial, the evidence was not clear. I'm wondering if you believe that was true. Was this such a problematic trial that that's getting lost in this larger controversy?
It can be politely described as a massive failure. The lead prosecutor was removed a month before trial after it, I believe he personally sent out spyware to attorneys and Navy Times editor Carl Prine without obtaining a warrant. Then their key witness for the prosecution testified on the stand that he killed the ISIS fighter, not Eddie Gallagher. And when I spoke with Mr. Parlatori later, he said it would have been better had the Navy investigators asked this gentleman how the ISIS fighter died. So it was, yes, in fact, shortly after Gallagher was acquitted, the Navy launched an entire review of the Judge Advocate General Corps and Naval Criminal Investigative Service to find what the problems are, because this is not the only case the Navy has lost. They tried bringing charges against the commander of one of the ships involved in a collision. And once again, the case fell apart largely because the Navy's top admiral kept making statements that the defense were claiming were instructions to the jury to convict this commander. So the entire Navy justice system as a whole is deeply flawed.
I want to play a piece of sound that speaks to that. This is from one of the other military members who's been involved in one of these cases, Army First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. He actually served 6 years in prison before President Trump pardoned him last week. He had been sentenced to 19 years for second-degree murder for ordering his troops to open fire on three men in Afghanistan in 2012. Those three men were not armed. Clint Lawrence, the Army First Lieutenant, gave an interview to Fox News where he said that he got a phone call from President Trump himself.
President Trump is somebody that sees something that's wrong and fixes it and doesn't care whose feelings it hurts. That's what I learned when I was talking to him on the phone. He said something along the lines of, he's like, this is going to make a lot of people, irritated at me, but I don't care. And to tell you the truth, I mean, small towns across America, all those people that I just told you I love and we all love, they love that. That's what they want in their commander-in-chief. That's what I want in my commander-in-chief, somebody that will see something that's broken and fix it.
And Jeff and Bradley, I'd like each of you to weigh in on this, because on one hand, we have you saying, Jeff, and we hear from this person that, yes, there are cases where there have been flaws in prosecution. How do we then integrate that with the larger issue of whether Donald Trump interceding here undermines military justice, makes people feel that we're saying our military can get away with war crimes? Bradley Strasser, can you feel that one first?
Yeah, absolutely. So getting into the details of all the different cases here that President Trump pardoned on, I think, is actually the mistake and misses the bigger picture. Of course, as some of the callers said before the break, does he have the legal right as commander-in-chief to do this? Of course. The question is, should he? And what kind of damage that does to the sacred trust of the civil-military relationship in this country? And I think it does quite a bit of damage. I mean, people have to really be thinking here about, what does this say to those honorable soldiers and sailors who are willing to speak up and had the moral courage to challenge and bring these cases to trial in the court-martials? But more broadly than that, it really challenges the ideal, again, that the military is a profession of arms, that we trust to hold themselves accountable according to their own legal system of the UCMJ. I mean, think about something Mr. Parlatore has been going around saying. He says that Admiral Colin Green's recent attempt to start a process to possibly remove Gallagher's trident, that's the symbol device that SEALs wear to signify they're part of the SEAL community, he said this was designed to humiliate Gallagher. Well, that's nonsense. This is not vindictive at all. Rather, what we have is you have commanders, great commanders and leaders like Admiral Green, who's trying to bring good order and discipline and accountability and ethics to his units, to his command. And this is what we trust our military leaders to do. And instead, you have President Trump intervening and interfering in that. It frankly is it's just an incredibly dishonorable action against the trust that we put in our military to hold themselves accountable in this way. Think also of how this impacts our allies and their relationship with us. Our allies who we go to war with, fight alongside with, our NATO partners, and all the allies across the world who have signed on to the Geneva Conventions and international humanitarian law. We all trust one another in the international community to hold our own militaries to account. And that when war crimes and these things do happen in war, that we will self-regulate within the profession of arms. President Trump has now cast all that into question. And I can't imagine the kind of impact this will have on our relationships with our allies who we go to war with. And not to mention, the least of which, the impact this will have on the psychology of all of our soldiers. Think of a soldier on the ground in a very tough situation, maybe in the horrors of war, maybe they've had a friend who's died, maybe they're flooded with understandable human emotions of anger, revenge, things like that, and they have to make a really difficult decision in war. Well, thankfully, we have tremendous training and leadership which will hold them accountable and make sure they make the right decision. After seeing this, maybe now they may think, well, I can do whatever I want because the president will come in and pardon me. This is a really disgraceful turn of events for our civil-military relationship, much broader than the details and the specificities of the complexities of any one of the cases.
Let's go to a caller from Atlanta, Georgia. This is Wes. Wes, welcome to On Point and your thoughts about the war crimes case of Edward Gallagher, the Navy SEAL.
Hi. I served as what they call DOC in the Marine Corps in Vietnam.
Doctor.
One of the things... Yeah, I'm an EMT in the field in combat. And one of the things I observed was our military was respectful of human life while dealing with the issues in combat. I fear very much that now a combination of Fox News and the president will completely destroy that context. And we will now enter into a situation in which all you have to do is go on Fox News, no matter what crime you've committed, and you're going to get pardoned. That's absurd and extremely dangerous to our democracy and, most importantly, to our military.
Wes, thank you for that call. I want to take another caller from Georgia, this one from Savannah, and this is Omar. Omar, welcome to On Point. Your thoughts about this war crime situation.
Hello. I'll try and be concise. This is just another example of Trump crashing through the guardrails of our military and constitutionality. He's constantly saying that he loves the military. Well, he started out his campaign saying he knew more than all the generals. He disparaged the Khan family, a gold star. He ridiculed McCain, even after he died, and referred to Mattis as the most overrated general in history. And, you know, he's just a megalomaniac that is trying to control all aspects of government, where past presidents have respected the guardrails, so to speak. And that's my comment.
Omar, thank you for that. And Jeff Shogle of Task and Purpose, something I want to put to you, which is in the letter yesterday that former Navy Secretary Richard Spencer wrote acknowledging that he had been fired. He wrote this in part. He said, "The rule of law is what sets us apart from our adversaries. Good order and discipline is what has enabled our victory against foreign tyranny time and again. Unfortunately, it has become apparent that in this respect, I no longer share the same understanding with the commander-in-chief who appointed me in regards to the key principle of good order and discipline. I cannot in good conscience obey an order that I believe violates the sacred oath I took." I'm interested in that because we heard Edward Gallagher's lawyer, Timothy Parlatori, talk about lawful versus unlawful orders. If this is a lawful order that Trump has made, but some people still consider it morally reprehensible, do they truly have no choice in the military but to be fired or resign? There's nothing they can do from within?
Well, before I answer that, I'd like to say I'm not quite sure how to take Secretary Spencer's remarks, because Secretary Esper in the Washington Post reported that Secretary Spencer had told President Trump that even though Gallagher would go through this process, he would still keep his trident. So I'm still not quite sure how he wasn't able to comply with that. But when I've talked to senior commanders, they've said that often that they can't resign, because if their troops can't resign, they can't. So many times commanders in senior positions will keep going even though they feel the president no longer listens to them. But officers are taught that if they are given a lawful order that they do not feel they can execute, they should resign. And in this case, that's what the secretary is citing. And it also sounds a lot like what former Defense Secretary James Mattis wrote in his resignation letter, that he felt he could no longer serve the president.
Let's go to a caller from Tampa, Florida. This is Tom. Tom, welcome to On Point and your thoughts as you listen to all of this.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. For 17 and a half years, I was in the Army, retired as a major. My son is a chief warrant officer, flies helicopters for the Army now. A couple quick comments. First of all, I'm astounded at all these people that are calling in on calls and saying that they were in the military and that they're appalled and all this kind of stuff, that the commander-in-chief of the military, as leader civilian civilian leadership of the military, has done this. This is not the case at all. This guy was acquitted. He was, you know, I heard a guy call him a murderer earlier on your show, that he acquitted a murderer. He was acquitted of all of those crimes. The crime he was found guilty of was posing with a dead insurgent or terrorist, taking a picture with him. And I'm going to tell you that, and it doesn't make it right, I'm just saying that this happens all the time. The problem I have with it is this, is that we are now placing our young soldiers in harm's way and requiring them to think like lawyers before they pull the trigger or before they're in a situation where they realize that they've got to make some decisions. And that's not what they're there for. They are war fighters. They are there to basically clean the battlefield, glean that chaff of all of the negative stuff that's happening, all the stuff that's coming their direction. Their job is to put that down. I'm astounded that someone would say that, when you get out of the military, all you have to do is go on Fox News and the president of the United States is gonna come to your rescue. This is not the case. This isn't what happened here. Again, what I saw, the reason I got out, the reason I tried to keep my son from going in, and he just wouldn't do it, wouldn't listen to me, is that at this point, it appears as though most of the hierarchy of our military are becoming too political. It is one of these things where people are second-guessing what happens in the field all the time. And I can tell you, I served with other countries in environments where they still trust the guy on the ground. The people they don't trust from our country are the leadership.
Tom, you've made a lot of interesting points. Let me put this to Bradley Strasser, who teaches the ethics of warfare. Bradley Strasser, could you respond to that?
Yeah, absolutely, Sasha. So
While I respect the caller's service, I just have to strongly disagree. We are not trying to raise up a bunch of war fighters who are supposed to go out there and just clear the field. Rather, we raise up honorable, just war fighters, and that's the proud moral and ethical tradition of the U.S. military. And I think that trying to act as if these ROEs are somehow restricting our time, the hands of our soldiers, is really, again, dishonoring the service of the 99.9% of men and women who do serve honorably. In this case, look, he mentioned convicted of murder. In fact, one of the pardon cases, it was the case. In Lieutenant Lorenz's case, he was convicted by a trial of his peers, other military members, of murder. And in the Gallagher case, the desecration of a corpse is a big deal. It's a violation of international humanitarian law, and it is a war crime. But look, again, it's getting away from the real issue here. Think back to this most recent news about Admiral Green saying he wanted to start the process to look at possibly removing Edward Gallagher's Trident pin. This is the SEALs regulating themselves. And this isn't new, by the way. 154 Tridents have been pulled since 2011. The idea is pretty simple, and it goes to the core of the trust between the civil authority and the military relationship, and that's that we trust the military to be a self-regulating profession. In other words, let SEALs decide who get to be a SEAL. But President Trump didn't want to allow that and wanted to intervene even on that most basic act of a commander, whether that's the pardons, whether it's the actions about the Trident and so forth. This is exactly, I think, why we see people like Secretary of the Navy Richard Spencer, I should say former now, resigning in protest.
Let's get in one more caller. This is Nick from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Nick, welcome to On Point. Your thoughts.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, Chief Gallagher was not acting as a chief when he's taking a picture with a dead body. He's not acting as a SEAL that time. Humble, silent service is what chiefs need to act in, and he was not doing that. He can have his trident pulled at any time. He doesn't uphold the actual trident, and he's smearing the names and the profession of all special operators across the board of all services.
Thank you for that. I think your line is breaking up, but I think you got your final point in. Thank you for that. Jeff Shogel, if you would finish for us, I'm wondering, is there going to be continuing fallout, or do we just move on? The Navy Secretary resigns, or is it fired, a new secretary comes in? What are the lasting consequences, possibly?
Every time I think this story is over, it finds a way to continue. I thought it would be over today, but Secretary Esper briefed reporters and said that, yes, the president had, in fact, ordered him to make sure that Chief Gallagher kept his pin. So I fully expect that there will be continued fallout and ramifications of this. I have no idea what comes next. Some of the service members who received clemency will ask that the awards will be restored, and then there's a new fight over that.
And by the way, we heard a caller earlier saying this was a political move by Donald Trump, and some people have speculated that he thought it would enhance his standing with the military if he did that or divert attention away from the impeachment inquiry. Any thoughts, Jeff, on the motivation for him to do this, beyond perhaps his state of motivation, which is let's give our military officers a second chance?
I'll let your listeners decide for themselves on his motivation, but it is true President Trump does have a lot of respect among the junior enlisted in the military. He is very popular.
That's Jeff Shogel. He's a Pentagon reporter for Task and Purpose, which is a military and veteran-focused digital media company. And Bradley Strasser, a professor of philosophy at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. He teaches the ethics of warfare to Navy SEALs and other Special Forces soldiers. He's also an author of at least two books. Bradley, thanks very much for coming on the show. And Jeff Shogel, to you too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue to comment and find more information about Jeff's reporting and more information at our website, onpointradio.org. Thank you very much for staying with us this hour. Also, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.